Hi, friends, and welcome to Bayou de Beltway. I'm your host, Pearson Cross. Welcome to our show. Today we have an eminent analyst, John Cuvion, who has his own JMC analytics and polling firm, and we're going to talk about all the elections upcoming in 2019. We are, in fact, heading into a very, very busy political season. And let me tell you a little bit about Mr. Cuvion. He was born in Baton Rouge, went to college at LSU, where he got an accounting degree, got a master's in information systems, and he is a CPA. Started polling in 2010, quickly formed JMC Analytics and Polling, and now has polled in over 30 states. And he's been with us before, so we welcome him back to the show. Welcome back, John.
It's good to be here today.
Well, thanks. Listen, the Democrats won pretty big in the House in 2018. They couldn't take the Senate. They still have President Trump to contend with as we go on for at least another year and a half or so. How's the enthusiasm race this year in 2019, particularly with regard to state politics? Are Republicans feeling good about state politics, the statewide offices and the legislature? So that's question one. Question two, how important is enthusiasm for getting voters out and electing people?
So I'm going to address this in several ways. The first thing that's important to realize is, of course, you and I had discussed last year about the imminent Democratic enthusiasm that I was consistently seeing after each state's primaries. And, of course, that culminated in a massive Democratic landslide of a magnitude I have not seen since the 1974 Watergate election. But what's more important, though, is what happens in the rest of the nation does not necessarily happen in Louisiana. More specifically, when I was looking at the election results this year, so we're still in the gestation stages of the 2019 election cycle, the state of Kentucky had primaries, Virginia is having theirs tomorrow, Mississippi is still a couple months away, but what I do know from looking at the Kentucky primaries, relative to the 2015 cycle, which was the last one they had statewide, Democratic enthusiasm was up 120%, Republican enthusiasm up about 20%. Now, I don't think that necessarily means that Democrats will pick up the Kentucky governorship. What it does mean, though, is the Democratic enthusiasm I've seen in many other states does seem to have continued. Now, having said that, we have to put that thought aside and get back here to Louisiana. The Republicans did very well in Louisiana, including in the 2018 congressional elections, where I want to say they got about 56-57% of the vote of those who are voting in the congressional races, because, of course, we did not have an open Senate race last year. Really, our state was low wattage compared to the rest of the nation. Republicans continued to do well last year and in some special elections that have been occurring since Governor Edwards was first inaugurated in 2016. What all of that means is this. I do think Republicans are in a strong position this year. Whether that strong position means they'll knock Governor Edwards off is another question, and it's still too early to tell. But I do think that Republicans have justifiable enthusiasm with regards to legislative elections, particularly since what's happening is term limits have been in effect technically since 1995, but they didn't have their impact until 07 because 1995 is when the 12-year clock started ticking. What that means in plain terms is the first group of people who were term limited, that occurred in 2007. And of course, it's been occurring every 4 years since then with a smaller class of people. However, this year, all of those people who were first term limited out in 2007 are now term limited out again this year, because there is a loophole in the law that allows you to switch chambers. So, in fact, quite a few House members with lengthy tenures switched over to the Senate in 2007. In fact, there were actually as many new senators elected as there were term-limited House members who moved over to the Senate in 2007, with only four true newcomers. That's going to be different this year, and because it's going to be different, I do see that there are going to be further Republican gains this year, particularly in an area of the state roughly between Highway 190 and Alexandria. We're talking about places like Vernon Parish, Evangeline Parish, Avoyelles Parish, that historically Republicans wouldn't even attempt to compete in. Now that they're starting to feel their sea legs, so to speak, I do think they have the confidence to try to compete in those races and or win. I see the same thing happening on the Senate side, but to a much smaller extent than the House side. So bottom line is, I do think Republicans should feel good about this year's elections. The question is whether feeling good means there'll be enough of a rationale to defeat Governor Edwards. That's a different subject.
Right. All very interesting, of course. So what you said about term limits is that they came due in 2007 for the first time, then 12 years later, 2019.
Yes.
So there are going to be a lot of open seats. So let's assume that Republicans who have both a majority in the House and Senate maintain those majorities. Are they likely to extend those majorities? And what impact will a larger Republican majority in both House and Senate potentially, and also potentially a more ideological majority, have on state politics?
So, yes, I do believe that there will be an increased Republican majority in both chambers. I'm thinking in the level of 1 to 2 seats in the state Senate and 4 to 7 seats in the seats in the state House. What that means in political terms is this: with more Republicans in either chamber, I do believe they will be more aggressive in terms of the legislation they try to push starting with next year. And that also means, too, since you're going to have many more newcomers, the newcomers certainly in the first year are going to be more likely to adhere to an ideological agenda than, say, those who are in their 11th or 12th year of tenure. So I would expect that there'll be some partisan sparks that'll be struck, particularly if you have Governor Edwards being reelected. Because what Governor Edwards is not going to have in terms of air cover starting next year will be John Alario in the state Senate, who is basically able to keep things moving in terms of the governor's agenda. With a different Senate president who will be in his first year of leadership, basically you're starting over at ground zero. I could see a similar but not entirely similar situation to what happened with Taylor Barra in the state Senate, where you have the Republicans independently deciding on their own what they want, who they want for the leader, as opposed to the governor's pick winning out like it did in terms of the Senate, but not the House in 2016.
So let's update our viewers, listeners, just a little bit. We're talking with John Cuvion, if you just tuned in. He is the head of JMC Polling and Analytics, or Analytics and Polling. Going back to the legislature, which you're talking about, so Governor Edwards, a Democratic governor, had really an ally in John Alario, who is president of the Senate, the most experienced person in the legislature. But that ally is, in fact, term limited. He's moving on. And Taylor Barra, the Speaker of the House, is also moving on. So we're going to have lots of new faces in House and Senate. If John Bel Edwards gets back in, he's likely to face more Republicans in both House and Senate. These Republicans perhaps will be more ideological, particularly than more recently elected ones. Why is that? Why do you have a stronger ideological bang when you first get to the House and Senate, rather than later on?
So what happens when you're talking about ideology versus more of a pragmatic approach to passing legislation is that you don't really get the feel of the legislative process until you've been there longer and longer. That can be a good thing or a bad thing depending on your point of view. But when you start off, you're ready to change the world and so forth because, of course, of all the promises you made to the voters when you were campaigning. Once you start to get to office, you realize that you're basically one of 39, or worse yet, one of 105, if you're talking about the state house. What that means in plain political terms is this: you may have strong opinions about things, but unless you can get 52 other house members or 19 other senators to agree with your strong opinion, you're basically wasting your time. That's where the camaraderie and the pragmatism, in my opinion, starts to become more the case. So if you're a new legislator, you really don't have that kind of knowledge or experience, particularly if you're coming entirely from the private sector world, as opposed to if, let's say, you were a parish councilman or police juror or sheriff or something like that. So I do think there'll be a learning curve for these new legislators, because we're talking about right now, at a bare minimum, 16 new senators and 40 new House members. You'll note that I said 40 and not 31, because that's the number. 31 is the number of House members who are term limited. There are 9 other House members who have either announced that they're going to retire. That's 2 of the 9. The other seven of the nine are non-term limited but are running for Senate seats. Mm-hmm. So automatically that creates vacancies. So the bottom line is you're talking about a nearly 40% new legislature. And by the way, that doesn't account for defeats. So there'll obviously be a couple more of those sprinkled in to where you're going to have a new legislature, and that's going to certainly present challenges for whoever the new governor is.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. So the new governor, or the returning governor, Fitzjohn Bill Edwards, it's going to be very different, I would imagine, politics in the state if John Bel Edwards gets reelected in terms of relations with the legislature. It's probably going to be, to some extent, pugilistic. There's going to be some conflict. But what happens if there's a Republican governor? How does that change dynamics in the state legislature?
That takes away 50% of the pugilism. However, to think that a new governor would necessarily have 100% of his way with the new legislature is not a realistic assumption because, of course, legislators are going to have individual pressures they have to face from their constituents, from each other, from lobbyists, and so forth, so that I would not expect that a governor would get 100% his way, but it certainly would be easier if that is a Republican governor.
So what do you think? Now, in the past, John Bel Edwards didn't get to pick the House Speaker, unlike past Louisiana governors. He wanted Walt Leger, but he didn't get Walt Leger. He didn't get Cameron Henry either, but he ended up getting Taylor Barra. Let's say it's a Republican governor. Will that Republican governor be able to call the shots with regard to the House, or do you think that the House has now become independent enough that they are from now on going to call their own shots?
I would say the new governor would have more leverage, but he wouldn't have 100% leverage because I think now that the die has been cast in terms of seeds of independence have been sown in the House, that it's very tough to go back to the old ways now. Because now that the House members have gotten a taste of independence, especially with at least 40 new members, I think it's even more likely they'll want to push the envelope further, as in perhaps the governor's choices for committee chairs may similarly not be obeyed. So I see it'll be interesting on both the House and the Senate side, although on the Senate side, I think they're going to be getting some House members in that class of 16, so it'll be a smoother transition. But I do think that, like I said, a Republican governor would have an easier but not an 100% easy time.
One of the crazy things, of course, about Louisiana politics is oftentimes the governor has a say in who leads the important committees, particularly if the governor is of the same party as the majority party in the House or Senate. And we're going to talk, I think, at some length about the governor's election. But first, we are going to take a break. We have been talking with John Cuvillon, who heads JMC Analytics and Polling. We are going to come back in just a little bit, and we're going to talk to him some more. So stay put.
The strongest voices in the community, business, and government are those of KRVS listeners. Want to be heard? Get your message out by becoming a KRVS program sponsor. Call 337-482-1437.
Under music director Riccardo Muti, the Chicago Symphony Orchestra continues to be one of the finest orchestras in the world. I'm Lisa Simeone, and I hope you'll join me as we hear the CSO charge into the 21st century with repertoire both new and old, taking listeners behind the scenes and into the music. That's right here with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra.
Coming up Monday night at 9, here on KRVS.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Pearson Cross. We are talking today to John Cuvillon, who is here for JMC Analytics and Polling. And as we left, we were talking, we mentioned the governor, always a wonderful thing to mention in Louisiana. What are the issues that are likely to be significant in this year's governor's race? Is the budget issue gone? Is it dispelled by having adequate money? Will it be a referendum on the abortion bills just passed? Will the figure of Donald Trump looming above all nationalize the election? What's going on?
Budget will be mostly but not entirely gone because, of course, since the tax increases of several years ago were not 100% repealed, then I could see the Republicans using that as a messaging point of the governor, quote-unquote, increasing taxes, because in the strictest technical sense, you only have a partial reversal of those original tax increases. So that's a messaging point they'll certainly raise. I could also see them raising issues of Louisiana being last in everything, people moving to Texas, et cetera, et cetera. Abortion, I don't see that as much of an issue, for the reason being is the governor took a strict pro-life stance, and there's really not much political ground to be gained by getting to the governor on the left of it, because, of course, the governor's already staked his stance out on the right, so to speak, and the Republicans are certainly not going to contradict him. I mean, they could certainly try to say that he's not far to the right enough, but I don't really think there's much more that could be said there. President Trump, I could see as an issue, although here's an interesting dynamic here. I don't think that President Trump really has that much personal animus against the governor. My theory about the why part is that both of them have a military background. So in other words, there's kind of a meeting of the minds, so to speak, even if you're talking about a Democrat versus Republican. It kind of reminds me of the relationship that President Trump had and has with former Senator Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota and Joe Manchin, current Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia. What that means in plain terms is that I would not expect President Trump to come in guns a-blazing, so to speak, against Governor Edwards, except perhaps in the runoff, because, of course, you have two Republicans, and there's really not much to be gained by picking one over the other unless the polls clearly showed that one was far ahead of the other once you get into mid to late September. Right now, it's way too early to make that kind of call.
Now, you just pointed to the issue of abortion. Of course, Louisiana just passed, along with a number of other states who passed recently, a very, very strict abortion bill. And some of the people in the John Bel Edwards side, the Democrats, have been very upset that, in fact, this anti-abortion bill went against some of their pro-choice leanings. Do you think that John Bel Edwards is going to get diminished support from his own side because of this abortion bill?
It presents the potential to hurt them and hurt him, and let me explain. The thing you have to appreciate about abortion is that it's a very complex issue that, depending on the precise wording of the poll question, you'll get substantially different responses. So by Governor Edwards doing a bill that does not even allow for exceptions, the problem is it's a bill that's inviting a legal challenge, and it is also staking out territory that you don't have majority support. Now, the Democrats are certainly upset with him right now. I don't think they would necessarily bolt the party and vote Republican, but what I could see happen, which is not what Governor Edwards wants, is, number two, you could have a loss of enthusiasm amongst the Democratic base. Number two, what I could see happen is, let's say you had an ideological liberal type, say from New Orleans or Baton Rouge, who was so upset at Governor Edwards' position that he or she ran for governor, that could easily pull 3 to 5% away from the governor. And those are votes that Governor Edwards very much needs as his base. So in other words, I see it as creating a distraction which he doesn't need to have, because he needs to have a solidly, or really a unified Democratic base if he wants to be in a strong primary position.
Well, let's talk about the numbers right now. So the Ralph Abraham campaign has been releasing some numbers suggesting that
yes.
That the race is a tie, and a statistical tie. Is that correct? Is this kind of a toss-up at this point?
Let me give you the actual truth here, since I had conducted the poll. I will say that what they were doing is a bit of puffery, and it's stretching the extent of the truth. Now, having said that, let me be more specific as to what the Ralph Abraham people are puffing up, perhaps a little bit beyond what I think is appropriate. So I did a poll back in late April. I was commissioned by the lobbying firm Harris DeVille & Associates to do this poll, and it was presented at the Louisiana Chemical Association's annual conference. And this poll showed that if you put Edwards and Abraham and Rasponi together, Edwards had a 38-23 lead over Abraham, with 7% going to Rasponi, 32% being undecided. I then did a hypothetical runoff matchup where I did Edwards-Rasponi and Edwards-Abraham. Edwards-Rasponi was 41-28 for John Bell, with 31% undecided. What the Abraham people were all excited about is when I did Edwards-Abraham, it was 40-36% with 24% undecided. technically the margin of error was 4%. So you're kind of at the borderline of it being statistically tied. But of course, being in the political world, you take what you can and, you know, run with it as far as you can. I think they were stretching things a little bit. A couple things which I think are also worth mentioning to your audience are this. The 38 and the 40 and 41% that Governor Edwards is having, regardless of how I did the ballot configuration, it's not good. But let me also add that when I allocated the black undecideds to the governor's bucket, so to speak, with the Edwards-Abraham Rasponi matchup, that 38% is really 45%. Furthermore, I don't really care at the present time about the exact spread between Abraham and Rasponi because there really hasn't been a campaign yet. Nobody's on TV, number one. Number two, Ralph Abraham has a huge head start because he is well-liked by the folks in the 5th Congressional District. And I'll even give you a number to illustrate how much that helps him out. When I looked at the numbers purely from the standpoint of the 5th Congressional District, which, of course, Representative Abraham is the congressman of, and it includes Northeast Louisiana, the Florida parishes, and about half of St. Landry Parish, the Opelousas to Port Barry half, or in Krotz Springs half. So in that district, Ralph Abraham had a 46 to 29% lead over Governor Edwards, with 2% for Rasponi. In the remaining five congressional districts of Louisiana, John Bel Edwards has a 40 to 18 lead over Abraham with 8% over Rasponi. In other words, when you take out the name recognition factor that Ralph Abraham has in the 5th Congressional District, 18% is okay, but it's not that very impressive. And the other thing, too, which is why I'm discounting the exact spread between Abraham and Rasponi, is that Eddie Rasponi, according to the last finance report, had a 10-to-1 cash-on-hand advantage over Ralph Abraham, meaning that he has $10 million to spend. Ralph Abraham has one. Even allowing for the fact that when the next finance report comes out that those numbers will increase, I'd be very surprised if all of a sudden Ralph Abraham came up with $9 million just to meet Eddie Rasponi's current total, because Rasponi's going to obviously come up with more funding because he's determined to win. So the thing is, I would not expect that large spread between Abraham and Rasponi to continue by the time we get to either Labor Day or even qualifying for that matter.
Is Abraham trying to push Rasponi out of the race?
Yes. I mean,
so that's what's happening?
He's trying to push him out of the race, which to me, I look at it this way. That's typical political jousting. And obviously, it is, with all due respect to Eddie Rasponi, incumbent upon him to start ramping up his efforts, because I can appreciate Rasponi's reticence to spend money because, of course, you have a really good example, and that is of Scott Angel, who 4 years ago went on the air, in my opinion, a little bit earlier than he should have. The problems were, number one, I don't recall that Angel had $10 million to spend, and number two, when you go on the air in the late winter and early spring, that's a little too soon, because once you go on TV, you have to stay on TV, and the public's attention span is not going to stay with you for those 6 to 8 months. Now, if let's pretend for a millisecond I were advising the Angel campaign, I would have advised him to wait until June 1st to start spending the money, because there was no incremental benefit by going on the air in the spring. So that is probably what Rasponi and his people are being cautious about. But I would say, now that you have this political jousting going on where the Abraham people are pushing every perceived advantage they can to get more donations, create the buzz up in Washington that Abraham is the quote-unquote inevitable nominee, it is incumbent upon Rasponi's people to respond. But I would like to finish up with my very long response by saying that Rasponi's showing in the poll is certainly not debilitating at this point. And I even have an Exhibit A. Congressman Garrett Graves over in Baton Rouge, and of course he represents parts of Houma and Thibodeau, he's currently the congressman now, but I actually polled that race 10 times back in 2014, and what I saw, even 3 months from the November primary, Garrett Graves was at 3%. He tripled his support during the month of August to 8%. He didn't really start appreciably increasing his support, and by the way, this was a field that had over 10 candidates. I didn't see him surging in the polls until early October. So what this means is that just because you're at 3% or 5%, or in the case of Eddie Rasponi, 7%, that could easily be rectified once you have a solid media campaign. So I'm certainly not going to write him off like the Abraham people are going to want to try to, but Rasponi does realize, and hopefully he realizes, that he does need to show evidence that this $10 million is going to be put to use to increase the name recognition of Eddie Rasponi.
And if I can add to your example, I remember it was Mike Foster back in 1995, I believe, who nobody knew Mike Foster much. I mean, he had a famous political name, but he was way down in the polls. And then he came out of nowhere as a Christian and a gun owner.
Yes.
In order to take the governor's race.
And the interesting thing about the Foster race, you're right, coming from St. Mary Parish, that you're kind of stuck between the Baton Rouge and New Orleans and Lafayette media markets. So Senator Foster certainly had the challenge of getting his name recognition up. One thing which I think was to his benefit in terms of the messaging you discussed, which is how Foster won, is certainly part of what he did. Another thing that I think helped Foster, too, was there was a tremendous amount of vacant real estate, so to speak, on the right wing of the Republican Party. In other words, there was a tremendous amount of antipathy against former Governor Romer over the abortion issue in 1991 when he vetoed a bill and his veto was overridden. And I remember seeing all those bumper stickers around the state that said, "Abort Romer, not babies." So point being was, even though that event was 4 years before the 1995 election, you still had a tremendous amount of antipathy from the party activists, to where Mike Foster was able to exploit that antipathy once he became a credible candidate. Part of that credibility was he did, of course, have to switch from Democrat to Republican, because, as he explained it later, he said, "Nobody believed me when I was a conservative Democrat, but once I became a Republican, all of a sudden there was kind of a halo effect that happened." So in other words, if you're talking about being pro-guns, pro-life, and all that as a Democrat, it's not going to get you as much real estate with the more ideological conservatives as it will if you are a Republican.
Okay, I think I want to put you on the spot, John. So let's say that it's a two-person race between John Bel Edwards and his Republican opponent, Ralph Abraham. What's your call right now based on what you see? And I realize this is way out and it's kind of unfair.
I would still give the edge narrowly to Edwards, and I'll tell you why. One of the things that Edwards and his people have been merciless with, and from what I've seen, Abraham's people have been very slow to respond, is that one of the unpleasant realities when you're running for another office, particularly if you are currently a congressman, that means that you're missing votes. And so Edwards's people are exploiting on social media all the votes that Abraham misses, particularly if you're talking about flood control and all that. I would expect that to be the messaging going forward on TV.
What about Abraham being attacking Edwards as a tax and spend Democratic governor in the old style?
Using the words tax and spend, to me, will get some mileage, but what Abraham has to realize is, while it's okay to run an ideological campaign if you want to be the top-performing Republican in October, you also have to think the long game, which is, how do I get those more moderate voters in the larger cities to come to me? And I don't think attacking will do the job.
Well, I guess that's something that we'll know as we get closer and as this race develops. We've been talking today to polling analyst John Cuvillon. Thanks so much for joining us.
Bayou to Beltway is copyrighted by KRVS for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without written consent of KRVS is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of KRVS, its officers, or members. To listen to a podcast of the interview we just heard, go to krvs.org.
Hi, this is Dan Phillips inviting you to Funkify Your Life Thursday afternoons at 1 and Friday nights at 9, right here on KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
This is Public Radio for Acadiana, KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.